Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
There might be some reputations roasting these days, too, when it comes to Michigan politics. It's Michael Patrick Shields with you. Our studio is in the center of it all, right across from the Capitol. But a man who's at the center of the most sensational and hottest story these days, if you want to put it that way, is Craig Mauger, the state politics reporter for the Detroit News. Thank you for being available. Welcome to the airwaves.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Your in-depth story was a behind the paywall for those who were trying to read it on the Detroit News website yesterday. And I appreciate you talking about this on the air in an open fashion like that. I would encourage people to pay the pittance that they're asking for the kind of journalism you'll get from the people of like Craig Mauger to be able to go through and read these. But the former House Speaker Lee Chatfield from Northern Michigan, where we're heard on WMKT, was accused by his sister-in-law of sexually abusing her beginning when she was 15 years old. He said it was a consensual affair, illicit though it may be, because he's married, of course. And that started a tumbler of, well, looking into the corners of the financial world and his ongoing activities as Speaker and after Speaker. And this is the story yesterday that, it was a couple days ago, that Chatfield provided a foothold in state government for lobbyists is the headline. I'm curious if you can sort of boil it all down for the casual observer, but also tell me whether this isn't the kind of thing that goes on all the time.
Yeah, those are great questions. I mean, to boil it down, Lee Chatfield provided an unusually close relationship with lobbyists in Michigan. He received personal benefits through clients of the firm Governmental Consultant Services Incorporated. And while receiving those personal benefits, he was providing favorable treatment to bills that GCSI clients supported and wanted. And, you know, there's always relationships between lawmakers and lobbyists. And as many of the sources I've talked to for this story said, Lee Chatfield just pushed it to a degree that people hadn't seen before.
Does that include renting a house or an apartment for when he stayed in Lansing from the Auto Dealers Association? And if so, what's wrong with that?
Well, that is very unusual. It's something that I haven't heard of before in 10 years covering state government. But we have a law in Michigan that requires financial transactions between lobbyists and public office holders to be disclosed if they are over a certain amount of money. The idea is that you don't want lobbyists who are trying to influence policy providing benefits or paying money and through some type of deal or arrangement to those who are voting on their bill. Now, the auto dealers have cited that this arrangement with Mr. Chatfield for 6 years being his landlord, they have said that this was part of their ordinary course of business, renting properties, and they have rented properties to other people, and he was just another person. Experts have said that probably violates the spirit of this policy, if not the policy directly.
Again, you said that there are relationships between members of the House and Senate and lobbyists, and sometimes they become, personal relationships, friendly relationships, where they might stay at each other's homes or extend each other courtesies, that kind of thing, or have someone over for dinner. And all of that is sort of being looked at as inappropriate or what?
I don't think some of the common lobbying practices here are being looked at as inappropriate. I think there are things that Mr. Chatfield is being accused of doing in his relationship with lobbyists that go far beyond what occasionally happens in Lansing. I mean, we know from search warrant affidavits that we obtained that there was some type of connection involving purchases of Adderall between Lee Chatfield, his brother, and at least two lobbyists who work in Lansing. That is also something that I have not heard of before involving our lobby corps here. And that appears to be on the Attorney General's radar because they have mentioned it in documents filed in court. And when you talk about the food purchases and having dinner together, we've laid out in one of the pieces we've done here the amount of food that was received by Lee Chatfield and some of his associates, and how it was above and beyond what has normally happened.
There used to be, I think it was MERS News, that used to put out every year the list of who ate the most free lunches in the legislature, and we used to snicker about it. And funny enough, it was Frank Foster, who I think preceded Lee Chatfield, who won the contest one year. Not the contest, but he got that designation. But it's all reported, and the argument was, well, I can eat lunch alone, or I can eat with somebody and learn something. So it's all kind of gray and sort of cloudy. Unless you're a guy like Larry Inman, maybe, from Traverse City, who says, wait a minute, I asked for checks I never even got, and I ended up losing everything I own trying to defend myself. So, you know, is this a one-off with Lee Chatfield, or just the way of doing business, other than, say, maybe the Adderall purchases?
Yeah, I think another really good question, but I would point to something else that is involved here, is that Lee Chatfield had a nonprofit organization that could raise money from anonymous donors and spend it on things where it didn't have to disclose exactly what the expenditures were. And his nonprofit, over a period of 2 years while he was speaker, raised more than $1 million. And there are questions currently about whether he was using this nonprofit for his personal benefit, which would go against federal tax policies about how social welfare nonprofits were used. You know, that's something that most lawmakers don't have access to. A Larry Inman would not have access to a nonprofit that would receive donations of, you know, accumulating to $1 million because he wasn't the Speaker of the House. Lee Chatfield was in a unique position because of his power to receive, you know, larger campaign contributions, to be a target of greater influence than the wide majority of lawmakers, because in his position, he sets the agenda for the House each day.
What good is having power if you can't use it?
I mean, he was able to use the power. He was the speaker, and he wielded it. And you know, there's dozens upon dozens of public acts that were put in place while he was speaker.
And do you think this will have a sort of, is it a cautionary tale going forward for people who are elected to that position and others?
I think the question going forward will be whether the Democrats who are about to take power, who have been railing against Lee Chatfield's alleged actions and the investigation into him for a year now, whether they are going to follow through with the ethics proposals that they've touted while they've been in the minority. Now that they're in the majority, are those same ethics proposals going to be good for them? They've also previously called for a House investigation of Lee Chatfield. Are they going to follow through with that now that they're in power? These are going to be things that we'll be watching, you know, from the outside when they take over in January.
There are names named in the article, how ex-House Speaker Lee Chatfield provided a foothold in state government for lobbyists. And the very thorough story is written by Craig Mauger in the Detroit News. If you're interested in sort of taking a peek, pay no attention to the people behind the curtain, I guess, but in this case, it's Lee Chatfield who's front and center, thanks to an investigation from the Attorney General and the scrutiny of the media. Mr. Mauger, thank you very much for the hard work. And once again, at the Detroit News, you can subscribe and you can have access to all of this, anything you want, at detnews.com with MPS.